Welcome to Brunch with Billionaires with your host, Tamara Lehr, Forbes top 11 most powerful leaders.
Welcome to another episode of Brunch with Billionaires, the show that invites you into the lives of the world's most accomplished business leaders with a B to their name. Now, today we have the privilege of hosting a dear friend who's a fellow Australian entrepreneur who has carved out a remarkable career, Sean Bonnett. From his early days of a lawyer, which we won't hold against him, to becoming a prominent property investor and eventually founding the well-known Prezi, which is a groundbreaking gift card company, Bonnett's journey is nothing short of inspiring, and I can't wait to share it with you. So, for a bit of background, Bonnett's zone of genius is in the world of property investing. With an astute understanding of market trends and an innate ability to identify lucrative opportunities, Bonnett swiftly made his mark in the real estate industry, focusing on the retail sector. Now, through strategic acquisitions and very bold development projects, he turned his ventures into a thriving business, amassing substantial wealth along the way. Bonnett's entrepreneurial spirit did not stop him at real estate, and he started exploring new horizons in the tech world. He recognized the evolving consumer landscape and the potential for disruption and founded Prezi, a groundbreaking gift card company. With Prezi, Bonnett revolutionized the way people connect with retailers, offering a cutting-edge platform that seamlessly brings together consumers and a diverse range of businesses. Under his leadership, Prezi has grown exponentially, generating over $2 billion in annual revenue this year and becoming a market leader in the space, expanding globally as we speak. So let's get started with this episode of Brunch with Billionaires, where Bonnett shares his journey to how he achieved his billionaire success, and most importantly, how purpose has been at the core of everything he does, with a mission to bring joy to everyone every day on every occasion. We'll also discuss his latest project, where he goes back to his legal roots and is seeking justice for those without a voice. Get ready to be inspired with the heartfelt conversation with one of Australia's most accomplished entrepreneurs, Sean Bonnett. All right, welcome everybody. As part of my commitment to the retail network, everybody knows how passionate I am about the space. I am heading up the Australia and New Zealand YPO network. So this is all about bringing us back together after COVID and highlighting some of the amazing humans that we have in Australia and New Zealand in the retail space. And I met last month, actually, well, about 3 weeks ago, I met Sean at a YPO retail roundtable in Melbourne, and I was extremely impressed with his story that he shared over dinner. So I would love to share a little bit about Sean today, and he is our guest. Welcome.
Hi, Tamara. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I loved learning about your story and, you know, what you're doing in the retail space. So in true YPO spirit, let's dive in and perhaps you could share a little bit of context as to how you got into the space and, you know, how you've managed to grow such a huge business in your career.
Of course. I started off my business Precision in 1994. I was a young corporate lawyer. The sky was falling in on Australia. It was deep in recession. Banks were going into receivership. Clients who I had seen in the corporate world becoming bankrupt, and it was a pretty dark time. But it also led me to come to a light bulb moment that being a corporate lawyer at this time wasn't for me. And I thought I wanted to be involved definitely in creating things, making things, improving making a small contribution to improve the communities. And that really led me to putting together structured finance type of transactions from these commercial assets, which were going into receivership. And it really starting off relatively small, putting a small purchase of a neighborhood shopping center together with first, second, and third mortgages to finance 105% of the purchase price. I was able to catch the property wave in certainly Australia over a few years, and through a number of these smaller transactions, then broke into larger institutional corporate property. This was now 1997-98. And really, then over the next decade, was privileged to get involved in larger developments and shopping center acquisitions, which really were all about focusing on the relationships that I had made as a young entrepreneur and being seen as reasonably cooperative to deal with. I was really just looking at business through a different lens in the property world, observing the margin that you could purchase assets and projects at, and you, on the other hand, that you could borrow the money. So even though I was paying top interest rates, I was also buying these assets at 15, 18, 20% yields. Mm. So I was still able, from a business point of view, to be building a profitable business.
Love that. It's interesting. One of my favorite sayings is when everyone is freaking out, freak in. So it seems you were taking advantage of the times there, which really elevated your career. So you didn't come from a property background. You came from a legal background. Is there any property in your family, or was this something that was of particular interest? Did you specialize in law in the property space?
Yeah, look, my dad was an oncologist, and my mum was a full-time mum, although she had done a language degree and did volunteer interpreting. But no, I really didn't come from a business-oriented family, and my really interest in property was, I certainly had, as a lawyer, one of my areas of specialization was dealing with property structures, finance, and tax. So I had a good complementary understanding of how to acquire larger assets and raise money and make them work. I guess from a business perspective, what I learned pretty quickly was taking a more commercial, relationship-focused approach, and sort of leaving the legal books very much in the bottom drawer, only to use if absolutely necessary.
Yeah, usually when you've got to reach for that bottom drawer, the relationship's usually eroded, correct? And but you still have lawyer traits there in the background. I can see plenty of paperwork, so. Yeah, so it wasn't South Australia was your first property investment, wasn't it? Was that your first project? Is that where you actually grew up?
I actually grew up in the UK, in London. Mm-hmm. And when I was 8 years old, my parents came to Australia with the WHO. And I think my dad was the second oncologist in Australia. So we started off at the Flinders Hospital where he worked in Adelaide and, you know, made Adelaide our home.
I love that. And I love Adelaide in general. I mean, I'm a small town country girl, first entrepreneur in the family as well. So I can very much relate to dreaming big and thinking big inside a country where I felt we had lots of opportunity because, you know, we were young and, you know, at that age, you know, your portfolio or your appetite for risk is a lot higher, I felt. And so I remember building a block of units when I was in my early 20s as a property, my first property development. And at the time, it seemed natural because it made business sense. But looking back, you go, wow. but again, convincing banks is another thing to give you the loans. So since then, you've obviously built up a nice portfolio in the retail and commercial real estate space. When did you feel you wanted to start diversifying? I mean, now one of your more well-known companies is Prezi, and I'd love to talk a little bit about that. But what was that pivotal switch for you? When did you decide that you were going to diversify? Because we all know there's two ways to make money, real estate and business in general. So what was the timing and what was the impetus that made you take that leap?
I guess by the end of the first decade of my business career, I was fortunate to convert all those structured finance loans into more traditional banking facilities with A-grade banks. And really that unlocked for me the ability to really think about one, how I wanted to actually expand Precision in terms of creating a larger, more spread out portfolio. But two, diversification was also high on my agenda of what other areas I was wishing to place funds into and also make my own contributions to. I had learned by that time that there's only one way really to invest, and that is to really be an active investor. Passive investment never really has been one of my focuses. At that time, technology was really emerging as a potential threat. In the property world, most people in the property world were ignoring it. But I thought it was something which would gain momentum. And a number of my friends had started setting up businesses and knocking on my door to see if I wanted to be an investor. And I thought, why not? It certainly offered people something very different. The currency of time was also an important one, which I thought a number of people would find very appealing in that it was helping people transact quicker and reduce the amount of potential due diligence they needed to do on whatever service they were getting. So I made a series of investments at around that time, which I either took sort of directorship type of positions on or advisory positions on, and really learned about the digital world.
I love that. And, you know, how long ago was that you started diversifying?
Around 2004, 2005.
Got it. And Prezi, you know, is one of the standout ones. You know, What stage was that at when you invested, and you know, how were you involved in growing that? Because that's now beyond Australia's shores, so you're diversifying as well as going global, correct?
Yeah. So again, 2015, I had a number of successes in the technology world, and thought it's now time to do this myself. And Prezi really was the collaboration of certain ideas and a business plan that Precision had worked up together with the ideas of a couple of other of its founders. And we put our ideas together and went to see a developer in Silicon Valley, Pollen, at that time, and came up with this idea for building a gift card company with the ability to swap gift cards to give the consumer choice, which by that time was one of my mantras. I thought it was really important in any business to be making the position of the consumer much more favorable than the physical world offered. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool to actually enable the customer that if they received a Walmart gift card, they could change it to an Amazon gift card, and that there was no fee in it. It was really just about focusing on improving the customer experience.
Well, I mean, when you look at the concept and how it's grown, I mean, you've doubled in size, right? In the last 12 months, I think you're on track for over $2 billion in revenue this year. I mean, what was your goal when you set out? And you know, what are you looking to in the future? Has that been through global diversification, or have you had other strategies along the way that you've been really pivotal? I mean, double growth is pretty big.
Yeah, the business started 7 years ago. And I mean, in the first year, we struggled to make just over $1 million. And today, most hours we make over $1 million in sales. What really assisted the business, supercharged it, was the pandemic. We had entered the pandemic with about 280 odd million in sales, and had literally just set up in New Zealand, in the US, and the UK. And pandemic came. At that time, my CEO told me, you know, we should probably look, Sean, at laying off 20-30% of staff. And I sort of said, why? We've positioned our business to actually take advantage, reap the opportunity of enabling people to keep in touch, be connected, you know, be recognizing and acknowledging special occasions, and showing support for each other. And we had agreed at that time to see how it goes for the first 3 months and review again his recommendation. And in the first 3 months, I think the business grew by over 400%. And he offered me his resignation. I didn't take it, but started to send him round the world to focus on hiring more people.
He was in charge of HR now. I love that.
It was a very, very active time during the pandemic for us. And it was actually it's interesting that you mentioned that, because hiring people was probably one of the areas which changed so much. I think I came out of the pandemic never having met physically over 80% of my staff. So HR had definitely evolved.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because when I had kids 14 years ago, I made a conscious decision to go very digital, all digital and all remote. So when COVID hit, it was kind of like nothing's really changing for us because everyone was already remote and at the same time had started offshoring and a lot of talent, diversifying to global teams, which put us in a really good position as well. So, you know, I think, they say, I get told that I'm lucky a lot, but it's preparedness of opportunity. So congratulations on that. And again, during a hard time, being very level-headed and not doing drastic decision-making, that's the time that you don't. So I'm sure your team is very grateful for that. So talk to me about the trends then that you're seeing inside the digital space. Is that still a focus for you? Or are you diversifying again and looking at other things? We've got the disruption of AI. We've got, the lack of talent and, it's very hard now to find quality people. There's a huge staff shortage. What are you doing to attract people to your business, to retain them, to address some of the tech and disruptions around AI that are coming our way? Are you embracing them like you were the last two opportunities that you saw?
So from my perspective, I see the company's mission to be very much assisting people to make connections, more meaningful connections, in that digital world. So creating it's not about just the gift card. In fact, we see very much the gift as whatever message that people write on the greeting card that we provide, or what video people record. That was probably one of the aspects of Prezi that really surprised customers, that we had CEOs and chairs during the pandemic literally sending video messages to the thousands of their staff, but having the most profound reactions. Mm-hmm. Many of which their staff had never actually received a video communication from them. And the fact that they were giving $100, $200, $300 to them by way of a Prezi smart card was actually at a time a real message of care, that the leader was actually appreciating some of the challenges that they were going through. And similarly, on a more personal level, families and friends being able to send messages and gifts to each other, particularly on a cross-jurisdictional point of view, or in Australia where you couldn't move more than 5 kilometres from your home. So it's not like gifting was easy. In terms of where Prezi will focus, look, the most important thing I think for us is really understanding our mission. And, our mission is all about trying to lighten up, create that magic that life is about what aspect of joy do you want to focus on today? you know, who are the people you should be recognizing, acknowledging, celebrating with? So, you know, we've come up with, I guess, many digital products which assist people to do that. You know, one of the first we did was, you know, every day there is a recognized global day of celebration. You know, today is Kittens Day.
Cats. So cat anyone lovers
who's a cat lover.
Well, then there must be a dog day.
there is. Sometimes, you know, every profession is celebrated. And, you know, we connect with both our retailers as well as our customers in that way. We also have what's called Prezi Buzz, which is an engagement tool for corporates, which enables managers and other leaders to connect with their staff and provide them praise. And once they get a certain amount of praise, I'm sure you can guess what they get, or they can convert those points to a Prezi. And it's really in those ways that we're looking at continuing to expand and to increase the number of jurisdictions that we're in. We've just expanded into Canada and into Ireland, and we have a number of other jurisdictions which we want to be present in over the next 1 to 2 years. As for going into other innovative plays, whether with AI or other engagement tools, we've taken the view that it's probably too early for us to actually bring AI into our business. We are paranoid about the privacy of our customers, and we just don't think AI is really safe, to be frank. So we have actually banned AI from our business and allowing staff to actually use it in our business at this point in time.
Yeah, makes sense. And, you know, what's interesting, before, you know, we started recording the call, we were talking about fandom and, you know, when you look at the timing, which is half of everything, people are the loneliest they've ever been since we've been tracking humanity. There's lack of trust. There's a lot of loneliness. So, and technology has made us even more removed from one another. So I love the fact that you're able to do personalization and customization at scale and, you know, every day bringing joy to people's lives, which is what's needed right now. Just little reminders and human connection. I call it H2H, human to human. How do we do that, but at scale? And I'm mentoring over $5 billion at the moment worth of, you know, retail brands. And whilst they're all saying, let's put in a chatbot, let's look at AI and all these things, I'm actually saying to them, don't forget the human element. How do we figure out how to do that at scale? Because everybody else is getting served up a bot. So, you know, I love that you've been able to figure that out and do that at scale, because it's those small touch points every day that really, really fulfill people's lives, not the once a year, here's your bonus and, you know, once a year, here's your birthday acknowledgement. It's that, you know, constant reminder that you belong and that they are appreciated, which goes a long way.
Spot on. In fact, that's one of our objectives, to put human values into our business. And it's actually that objective which is probably the most compelling in hiring top talent. You know, we have not found it as challenging as certainly most to attract very capable people in the marketplace. And But once they understand the mission,
hmm.
They either want to be a part of it and help in its development and to achieve it, or it doesn't resonate and they'll look, you know, for being part of another business.
Hmm. Well, there's not many people who can put on their business card facilitator of joy.
Exactly.
I like that.
We say we're in a G-rated business. We deal with everyone from around 10 years old to over 100. And we're very much about the injection of joy, magic, the human element into people's lives. And the people who work in the business really look at it as quite a rare business in the digital world that actually focuses on doing that.
I love that. And people, depending on their kinesthetics, can do videos, they can do handwritten notes. You can even help them and support them in the writing of their gift cards. So I think, you know, the art as well of being able to articulate and share, you know, your feelings is really lovely as well. And something that, you know, going into the future, especially nowadays with everyone being on technology, we've got to get back to that deep, authentic connection with other humans.
100%.
Well, thank you for facilitating that. Now, I'm going to be dobbing you in here because it doesn't sound like you're slowing down. And I don't believe you sleep much. I think you were called out as sleeping very little. So how do you keep yourself happy and full of joy? It's business what brings you joy. It seems like you love what you do. I mean, you know, you're not slowing down anytime soon by the sounds of it.
I look at myself at half time. But look, from a joy point of view, my two kids are at the front of that line. Got a 17-year-old daughter, Eve, and a 15-year-old son, Gabriel, who often gets mistaken more like for 21 years old. When we travel together in the last 6-12 months, he gets lots of wine glasses put in front of him, and it's quite confronting when your 15-year-old is suddenly being treated as an adult. But now I have very close relationships with my kids, and keep a close, strong network of friends and family, and really fuel, I guess, my joy with my passions. You know, one of my passions has been actually another cause/business I got myself involved in the form of litigation lending, which is a business that focuses on social justice and, you know, the pursuit of supporting minority groups. And that's on a more personal level given me a lot of satisfaction. To give people who otherwise would not have a voice really a platform. And whilst it is a business, it's very much aligned with enabling these groups to actually have equal and proper say in whatever issue they're dealing with. You know, I'm a great believer that democracy is actually at its strongest when everybody has a voice.
Exactly. And I love that it's almost full circle for you now. You're back in that, you know, lawyer space, but being able to apply it in a purpose-driven way. And, you know, both of us have been in business for over 25 years, entrepreneurs for over 25. And, you know, that's the reason that you get into business is not to, you know, business is a game and it's a fun game to play and it's a challenging game to play. And it's nice to see, you know, how far you can take things and how much of an impact you can make. But really for me, at this part in my career and my journey, I haven't thought about the halftime thing yet. That's an interesting one. I'll ponder that. But for me, it's really about how do we, you know, create businesses that stand for profit and purpose. I'm still very much of the opinion that business needs to be profitable. And I also believe that business is a force for good and can be used as a force for good. So I love that you're not doing that across all of your ventures at the moment, which is wonderful because it's it means it doesn't feel like work when we're making an impact every day. And
It definitely creates a stronger alignment with the people who you work with. And really does help very much in attracting talent. I think that saying, birds of a feather, it's so true. Mm. And the louder your mission is, people come from all places to work in these types of businesses. Charities don't, there's not one charity around the world which really focuses on enabling minority groups to have a voice from a legal enablement perspective. Mm. So it's very appropriate to actually be creating a proper platform which does that. Mm. And it's really interesting to consider where that type of platform should come from. Mm. Should it be something, in fact, that governments are creating or the business community? And it certainly shouldn't be at the discretion and behest of a few donors, but rather something which minorities always have access to. So to be making a contribution in that space is incredibly meaningful. Mm. And certainly more recently to be focusing in Australia in the resolution of a number of First Nations claims has also probably taken me into a space that I was not expecting or forecasting to be in. Mm. But are you know, incredibly pleased to have taken this initiative into the resolution of such deep wounds in the community.
Mm. Well, I watched that very closely when it was unfolding, and congratulations on that outcome and for that commitment. It wasn't an easy feat at all. And, you know, is that something that you're looking to take elsewhere as well? I mean, there's First Nations in other countries, which I think would really learn a lot from the process that you're going through here in Australia. And that's what I think is important about business is, you know, solving problems and then sharing that so that others can also fast track the same sort of resolutions for themselves.
The answer is yes. Mm-hmm. We are looking at certainly expanding into Singapore. Mm-hmm. Where the international courts are. for mediated disputes, and where we believe we can have more of an international focus because of that. And really to be getting involved with these types of matters and really assisting with their resolution on a more global level. I guess you realize, well, I've certainly come to realize that you know, there's two ways of dealing with these matters. One which more commonly is adopted, which is sweeping under the carpet and burying them, only for them to usually become bigger in future generations, or two, to really just address them with a very straight bat in a completely objective and empowering way, not focusing on necessarily where that outcome needs to be, but rather on taking them through that proper resolution path, wherever it may actually lead to.
Which, you know, is all about that peace and being able to then move on, which is really important as part of our growth as human beings as well, is bringing back that compassion, that empathy, acknowledging impact, and doing the right thing. Maybe that's why, you know, a few Australians have done so well globally. We keep it pretty simple, and a handshake's still a handshake, and, you know, you do right by people and you do the right thing. So, you know, I really see that resonating in you. So thank you for everything that you do. Thank you for not just retiring when you could have, and evolving further to become such an important part of the business community and a role model, but also showing us what's possible if you stand and do the right thing and help others, use your business skills and your zone of genius to help others. So I think the two words that I would summarize for you is joy and justice.
I like that. I'm happy to take that, Tamara. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast, and a real pleasure.
Well, please keep it up. Know that I'm here and everyone is behind you. You know, it's interesting you say birds of a feather, but I just want everyone who's listening to know that there are extraordinary humans, you know, like Sean out there, who are really on a mission to make the world a great place and utilizing business to do that. So, you know, that's the reason we get into business. You know, we talk about billions and all that sort of stuff, but really at the end of the day, you know, this is what counts and this is what matters. So we are grateful to people like you who are serving the community and creating businesses that will go on as beautiful legacies well beyond when we're here.
You're too kind, Tamara. Mm-hmm. But, you know, happy to have and to continue to play a role. And you know, as I said, it's couldn't really do much without the great team of people that's around me, and which is really ultimately a privilege to serve them. So thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.